From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. As we honor World Press Freedom Day, we speak with the president of one of the foremost organizations that monitors, protects, and advocates for freedom and democracy around the globe. Michael Abramowitz is president of the independent watchdog Freedom House. Founded in 1941, Freedom House was the first American organization to champion the advancement of freedom globally. Before assuming his post as president of Freedom House in February 2017, Michael Abramowitz was director of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's Levine Institute for Holocaust Education. He led the museum's genocide prevention efforts and later oversaw its public education programs. Previously, he was national editor and then White House correspondent for the Washington Post newspaper. Michael is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and former fellow at the German Marshall Fund and Hoover Institution. As we commemorate World Press Freedom Day, we are delighted to welcome Mike Abramowitz, who joins us via Zoom. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Well, Mike, Freedom House recently released its 50th annual Freedom in the World report, reviewing access to political rights and civil liberties in 195 countries and 15 territories during 2022. At Freedom House, you have a scale of free, partly free, or not free upon which you rate the nations. What would you say are the report's primary conclusions regarding freedom trends or even lack thereof?
Well, this year, we had a very interesting report, I thought. So as you say, Freedom House regularly documents the health of political rights and civil liberties, the health of democracy, if you will, around the world. And we rate every country on a score of 0 to 100. We have been in the midst of what some have described as a democracy recession, which means that every year for the past 17 years, more countries have seen declines in political rights and civil liberties than improvements. And this has been quite noticeable. You've had authoritarian regimes like China, Russia becoming less free. And you've even seen major democracies, India, the United States, other democracies suffer some erosion in their democracy. So that's the general trend. What we saw in the last report that just came out in March is what may be a slowing down of the decline. Freedom did decline for the 17th consecutive year in 2022, but it was by the smallest margin we've seen since the downward trend began in 2006. So 35 declines, 34 improvements. So the hope is that the decline may be bottoming out. We won't know for sure. I do believe that the global demand for freedom and democracy is still strong. You see that in the incredible people protests that you continue to see around the world. People demand freedom, but the autocrats and the autocratically minded are denying them that freedom. So we're very hopeful about the future, but we are in a very difficult patch right now.
Difficult patch indeed. And not surprisingly, the Nordic countries like Finland, Sweden, Norway are among the very best. And then among the bad actors, we find also unsurprisingly North Korea, Eritrea, Turkmenistan, and South Sudan, with China, of course, being the worst of the worst.
That's right. And that's sort of a regular amount of bad countries. You know, it's interesting about China. China has always had a low level of respect for human rights, for political rights, for civil liberties, but it's gotten even worse under President Xi Jinping. So when Xi Jinping came into power 11 years ago, China scored a 17 on a scale of 0 to 100. Now, that's very low globally on a relative basis. It's gotten even worse. It's down to 9. And so that suggests what many in the media have observed and others is that a real kind of consolidation of the repressive apparatus by China. And what's particularly concerning about China in the current environment is that it is becoming even more aggressive about exporting its version of authoritarianism to other countries. countries. One of the issues that we've watched about, and I hope we can talk more about this, is the issue of transnational repression, where autocratic countries are reaching beyond their borders to try to silence dissent, intimidate their critics, in some cases even murder them. You think about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi by the Saudis at a Turkish consulate 5 years ago. So this is a real problem, and China is one of the most egregious perpetrators of transnational repression.
That is very interesting, and we will return to that in a minute. But first, let's go to now the Middle East. Your report indicates some of the worst countries in the Middle East are, and I would say unsurprisingly, Syria. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. Maybe there has been improvement. But again, we think of Jamal Khashoggi and that murder in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and then Yemen. But you've also hedged a bit, saying that freedom access has slightly improved in the region, with better scores in the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, that is, and even Saudi Arabia and Lebanon. Anything you would like to add to what the so-called worst performers in the Middle East?
Well, I would just note two countries. First of all, Tunisia. Tunisia is a very, I guess some people may call it in North Africa, Middle East, but I think it's part of the Arab world. And after the Arab Spring in 2011, you know, most of the countries that had openings reverted back to traditional authoritarianism that's characterized most regimes in the region. So Tunisia was one of the bright spots. They had a parliamentary democracy, and that has been eroded very seriously over the last 2 years, and there's been a return to autocracy and dictatorship. And honestly, if there weren't so many other big issues happening around the world from the point of view of democracy, human rights, you think about Russia, China, Ukraine, these other countries, I think there'd be more attention on Tunisia. I mean, I think the other country in the region that is very noteworthy to discuss is Iran. And Iran, I think, illustrates several things that we like to think about or talk about at Freedom House. I mean, first of all, the Women Life Freedom protests in the fall were just incredible, and probably the most powerful round of protests since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Now, that has been brutally put down by the regime. You've had a number of executions of protesters, the kind of comments by the regime that, hey, they might tolerate the not wearing of the hijab, seems to have been backtracked. So Iran is going once back to its very autocratic, repressive approach to things. But I think you're going to continue to see protests in Iran. The women of Iran, their brothers, their fathers are basically sick of the Islamic regime. You know, maybe 10 years ago, there was a feeling that there could be reform, but I don't think anyone's in Iran seems to be under any illusions that there can be reform. I don't know when that regime will end, whether 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, but I think the consent of the governed will not return to Iran until there is a different form of government there.
That's a very interesting point. But when you were about to say Iran, the word or the nation that came to my mind, which is surprising, and I'm not sure what your rating is on it, but nonetheless, Israel on the other extreme, so to speak. However, we are seeing a once vibrant democracy in potential peril, given Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's proposed judicial overhaul, which would undermine democracy, many say.
Right.
On the other hand, right, but just quickly just saying that on the other hand, that vibrant civil society is really pushing back, as we see from the myriad street protests and outcry from even the security establishment.
Right. Israel is a very both interesting and concerning situation, and we're watching it very carefully. Israel, as your question suggests, has been considered a free country. We rate territories differently, so the West Bank and Gaza is different. But I would say that the two issues, well, three issues I would just highlight about Israel. One is what you say, the judicial initiative by the Netanyahu government would be, if it were to be implemented, would be a significant blow, in our view, to Israeli democracy. I mean, I think one thing that we really stress at Freedom House is the role of checks and balances. The courts in Israel have long been considered a bulwark of checks and balances. And there could be, I'm not saying there could not be some reforms, but clearly many in Israel, and we too are concerned that these proposals go too far in terms of eroding checks and balances. Now, that's one issue. But as you say, there's been an incredible sort of outpouring of protests from civil society, from others in Israel. And I would point out that it's not just on the left. I've also seen comments from people on the Israeli right that have been quite concerned about this. So I don't think it is a necessarily a partisan issue in Israel. So I think one has to be heartened by the protests. I think the other thing, honestly, about Israel that I think people have to recognize is the terrible treatment of the Palestinians in the occupied territories. And that is something that will be a stain on Israeli democracy for some time unless that is fixed.
You are listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Michael Abramowitz, president of Freedom House. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a valued Facebook follower, Jamshid Khan from Islamabad, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Mike Abramowitz. He's the president of Freedom House. We're talking about the state of freedom around the world as we commemorate World Press Freedom Day. So, Mike Abramowitz, we were talking about the Middle East. We just finished talking about Israel. And I really appreciate your mentioning Tunisia, which was such a hopeful place after the Arab Spring. And we're seeing so much backsliding there. And even I would mention Sudan. There was so much hope for the democratic transition there, gloomier than ever after what was considered a fragile, nonetheless, a transition to democracy now descending into civil war. This is just a terrible trend.
Yes, Sudan honestly is just an awful story. It's a cursed nation. There's been some of the worst violence in the world in Sudan over the last 30 or 40 years. As you mentioned, Carol, we had really been hopeful. I think the world had been hopeful that maybe Sudan had turned a corner in 2019 with that really a people-led revolution that deposed the dictator al-Bashir. But Sudan appears to be reverting to normal patterns of rule by military and thugs, candidly.
Yes, indeed. And we're following that story and we'll be doing so in the days, weeks, and months ahead, hoping for a brighter future for that incredible nation. Let's now turn to Turkey, which is an interesting country at the crossroads of Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. According to Freedom House, it still remains one of the worst performing countries, at least compared to its European peers. And we note, of course, that on May 14, they will have presidential and parliamentary elections. So we need to be very vigilant. What would you like to say about the state of freedom in Turkey?
Turkey is a really fascinating story. And as you've pointed out, these elections coming up are really going to be an inflection point. So Turkey, in many ways, has been kind of a poster child of the erosion of freedom, the erosion of human rights over the last 20 years. There was a country that at one point had been really improving in terms of respect for rights. It was improving so much that there had been hope that it could join the European Union. And under President Erdogan, there has been a substantial decline in freedom, really, in Turkey, according to our reports. Now, one thing that we're thinking a little bit about World Press Freedom Day, which occurred during this past week, and I think Turkey is really an example of the larger trends, which we're quite concerned about with respect to press freedom. And I hope we can talk just a bit about this. But Erdogan has been one of the biggest jailers of journalists, and he has really intimidated the independent media. And so we're quite concerned about that. Now, I think there's a big question about the election on the 14th. Really, two questions. Will Erdogan stay in power? Will he win the election or not? Now, the polls suggest that he's losing. But really, the other question is, if he loses, will he relinquish power or will he come up with some kind of trumped up excuse for defying the will of the voters? I mean, this is a really important story from the point of view of democracy, freedom that's taking place later this month in Turkey.
No question about it, Mike, because no one knows more about that than here in the United States. And you use the word trumped up. And, you know, we do recall that former President Donald Trump questioned his legitimate loss in the 2020 election. And we're still talking about that to this day. He faces so many legal challenges, but it is a trend. And people are looking to the United States as a model, not just Turkey, but we even recall in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, We weren't sure if he was going to relinquish power when President Lula da Silva won, even with a narrow margin last year. And that leads me to ask you a larger question. Do you think that the trend toward greater liberty that we saw a few years ago, which has been a pretty much a trend over the past 50 years, will it recede? You know, because like I said, with Donald Trump, he called the press the enemy of the people, which was rather shocking because America has always been seen as a beacon of freedom. So to what extent do you think that we will be able to go forward in a more positive direction?
Are you saying in the United States or more broadly?
Well, really, I think more broadly.
Right.
And, you know, if you want, you can include the United States to the extent that we have, and you have documented that the United States has backslid, really, in many ways.
Right. Well, let me say this, a couple things, because there are a couple things I think that are in your questions. Number one, there is no question that over the last 17 years, freedom, democracy has been receding around the world. There's no question. Our data shows that. There are other reports that look at the same thing. So there's a receding of freedom and democracy. Now, we're still ahead of where we were at the end of World War II. You still have, I think, more than 100 countries that are democracies. And at the end of World War II, you had only 12. So I guess the nutshell is that the general trend in the long term has been positive. We're going through a very difficult period of the last 15 to 20 years. And really, the question is going to be for the future, will we be able to turn it around? I believe we will be, but it will require attention by individuals, by governments, by civil society, all over the world. And I think the point you make also about the United States is worth reflecting on. You know, the United States has been part of the democratic decline that we have highlighted around the world. We're still a free nation in the United States with very strong aspects of democracies, but our institutions and our norms have been eroding. And I just think the point you made about, you know, the failure of large parts of our population to accept the results of the 2020 election is indicative of that. Now, other countries around the world are watching that. Clearly, Brazil saw what happened on January 6th. And I hope that in Turkey, all parties will respect the election results if they are concluded to be fair. It's really essential. Democracy depends on a peaceful transfer of power where people accept election results and then move on to fight the next election. But if Erdogan or any leader does not accept legitimate election results, that's really a problem for democracy.
Indeed, our institutions here in this country have been tested, and they're still being tested to this day. So we shall see. But I would like to return to an issue that you brought up about this transnational repression being promoted by autocratic regimes like Russia and China. Certainly, there are cases apart. And of course, as we note, since the invasion of Ukraine, Russia in particular has cracked down even further on its limited press freedom, forcing the very few independent radio and TV outlets to shut down, forcing journalists to flee to neighboring Baltic states. One can receive a long prison sentence just for calling the invasion a war rather than Putin's nomenclature, a so-called military operation. And as we commemorate World Press Freedom Day, Mike, we would be remiss if we didn't flag that a member of the U.S. press corps is in prison in Russia on trumped-up charges of espionage. And I'm speaking of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gerskovich. He was covering Russia's mercenary military organization, the Wagner Group, when Russian officials arrested him on March 29. The U.S. State Department has since called him, quote, wrongfully detained, which means that the government sees him as a political hostage. To what extent does this bogus charge and the consequences have just an additional chilling effect on journalists around the world just trying to do their legitimate work of reporting the facts?
Right. Well, first of all, it's an outrageous situation what Putin and his regime did to Evan a few weeks ago. He's being held in jail. He's an internationally accredited journalist. You know, it really showed the complete disdain that Putin has for any semblance of norms about press freedom. I mean, it's been a traditional thing over the Cold War, over the last 30 years, that foreign journalists, their ability to do their job has generally been respected, even in places like Russia. So I think that's really a very strong sign of what's happening in Russia, which is very sad. But it's also, sadly, it's just a small part of the overall effort to crack down on journalists. We found in Freedom of the World, you noted that it was our 50th anniversary of Freedom of the World, and we kind of looked at some of the broad trends over the last 17 years of this decline. And there's no question that infringement on freedom of expression and freedom of the press is really one of the key drivers of global democratic decline. I want to give you a statistic that I think is really kind of interesting, that, as you know, when we rank countries, one of the key indicators is media freedom. You know, how is a country doing on media freedom? And you can be ranked zero, basically no media freedom, up to four, which is a robust media environment. And in 2006, only 14 countries or territories scored zero on media freedom. And last year, it ballooned to 33. So that's a real sign of what's happening around the world. And I mean, to me, by the way, I think you might have alluded to this. I'm a former reporter myself. You know, in my lifetime, I don't believe I've seen the kind of collective danger that journalists individually and journalism as a profession is under around the world. And it's a range of threats, really. It's physical attacks. It's the murder of journalists that's happening or throwing them in jail. There's traditional censorship. But there's also efforts by authoritarian countries to really squeeze journalists economically and journalism economically. So it's kind of a triple whammy of a very bad situation for press freedom. I think it's one of the most significant issues if you look at the future of democracy. Unless there is more freedom for journalists, unless there is more freedom for independent media, then I think the future of democracy will be bleak. So that's really an important thing for all of us to think about, especially this week when we are marking World Press Freedom Day.
Thank you for that, Mike. And it's really striking, that statistic that you just mentioned, from 2006 to 2022, from zero to 33 in terms
of 14 to 33.
So excuse me, 14.
No, but it's just a small feature of a larger, very dreary kind of landscape for the free press.
Indeed. And of course, then there's the problem of dictators, autocrats like Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, you know, manipulating the press, using the press, the veneer of the word, to promote disinformation. And that has to do with, as you said earlier, expanding their version of authoritarianism and transnational repression, which you're seeing in Africa and in many other countries. For example, let's take Africa, because I do want to broach the topic of press freedom and freedom in general there, where you have, for example, China and Russia using their vehicles, for example, Russia Today or Sputnik radio broadcasts, let alone digital platforms, and China as well. They flood countries that they want to brainwash with their particular distorted narrative of events, with disinformation, again, false narratives about, let's say, the invasion of Ukraine or China's Belt and Road Initiative or whatever. And they often succeed. And even despite, for example, Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, or even Voice of America, we don't have the same resources or perhaps don't put the same priority on combating this disinformation. But we have now learned that these so-called information wars are as important, if not more so, than the actual wars that seem to be taking place. What are your thoughts?
Well, thank you for that very good question. I do believe that there is a disinformation or an information war going on around the world. Both China and Russia have been extremely aggressive in terms of trying to shape the information terrain all over the world in the ways that you fashion. I mean, I would commend your listeners to a significant report we did late last year about Beijing's global megaphone, Beijing's global media influence. And we looked at how Beijing has been really trying to shape the media environment in at least 30 countries around the world, you know, buying up outlets, intimidating reporters, disinformation campaigns. It's a very good report. I do think this issue of social media and technology is worth reflecting on. I think it's been both a positive and a negative in repressed societies. I think there's no question in certain countries, protests would not be possible, including in Iran, for instance, or in Russia with the presence of YouTube, where that's been a source of very, in some cases, good information about the level of corruption inside Russia. That there's no question that social media, you know, can be a force for good. and that pro-democracy movements and actions are using it to organize and share news. But I think, as you suggest, authoritarians have also weaponized it. And we've been really tracking this issue for quite some time. Countries like Russia and China, Iran, Turkey, Mexico, to some extent. You know, Mexico is a democracy, but we found that they had been very active, the government, in the past in trying to use social media to spread propaganda, to use bots to amplify false information, and to really harass and track people. So this is a real issue, and we're quite concerned about it.
The continent of Africa, we would be remiss if we didn't drill down a bit into trends you're seeing there. And of course, we have a disproportionate number of listeners in Africa, particularly the larger English-speaking countries like Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, South Africa. And many of these countries are flooded by the very disinformation that you spoke about from Russia and China in their vernacular, so in English and French, leaving listeners wondering about the actual source of the so-called news. So they're liable to believe the false narratives because they're presented in mellifluous English, but really it's Sputnik Radio or some Russian propaganda channel or Chinese. And we note that you said in your report that Burkina Faso is perhaps one of the worst performers after the coup and other countries. So what can you tell us about some of the democratic-leaning countries in the continent? Any hopeful signs or those that are backsliding in terms of freedom?
Sure. Now, thank you for that question. And it's important. Africa is a super important continent. And I would say the picture for freedom for democracy has been mixed in Africa. Specifically in 2022, freedom advanced slightly in Africa, with 11 countries seeing improvements in political rights and civil liberties and 9 having declines. And that's the basic number there. You know, the biggest decline was in Burkina Faso, which, of course, had 2 successive coups and dropped 23 points, which is a huge amount in our overall scores. Kenya was a better story. It gained 4 points after one of its most transparent presidential elections ever. So I think those 2 cases point to the kind of differing, you know, trends across the region. And I think the 2 countries that I would also just want to mention would be Sudan and Ethiopia, really 2 of the largest and most influential countries on the region. And both really had been very hopeful situations several years ago. You had in Sudan a coup that deposed the leader of Sudan, and then you had a liberalization, an opening in Ethiopia with Prime Minister Abiy coming to power. But there's been great disappointment in both countries, particularly in Sudan. Well, I'd say both countries, really, but Sudan seems to be reverting, sadly, to the kind of military dictatorship that has kind of dominated the country since its independence, and very violent. There's a big threat of violence. And there's really, you know, Ethiopia has become one of the most violent. The situation in Tigray is one of the most dangerous in the world from the point of view of ethnic killing, which is something that we've seen around the world heightened in Freedom House. But that's, so we're quite concerned about trends both in Ethiopia and in Sudan. And I think, as you suggest, great powers, you know, like China, Russia, are looking to wield more influence in the region. And that's something that I think is not necessarily a force for good.
And as we close, Mike Abramowitz, your report provides some policy recommendations. I wonder if you could talk about some policy recommendations going forward in order to reverse the deterioration in trends for political rights and civil liberties and, of course, press freedom around the world. And one of them, I note, includes helping Ukraine win against Russia's aggression.
Right. Well, I would certainly say that Ukraine is really a fault line in the struggle for democracy. And I think one of our major recommendations this year has been for the world's democracies to support Ukraine. Quite honestly, if Ukraine succumbs to Russian aggression, that is a really bad story for democracy. And I think dictators and authoritarian countries will be really emboldened to move more decisively against democracy, against democratic norms. So we put a lot of emphasis this year on a need to focus on continued support for Ukraine. And I think it's an interesting story from a geopolitical point of view. You've seen many countries around the world, in the West, but also countries like Japan and other countries who've been very supportive of the efforts in Ukraine. But you've seen other, you know, important countries, South Africa, India, other countries in the global South, kind of be sitting on the sidelines. And I think we have to acknowledge that there are many in the global South that maybe think that support for Ukraine is kind of hypocritical, and why are everyone focused on the violence there when there's less focus on violence in places like, Ethiopia or Sudan, to take two examples we just talked about. So I think that's a real concern. I think we can acknowledge hypocrisy, but I do think that in the long term, it's going to be a very bad thing for the world if Ukraine succumbs to Russian aggression. So that, I would say, is our number one concern.
Mike Abramowitz is president of Freedom House, and that's an organization based in Washington dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy around the world. Michael, thank you so much for your time and sharing your terrific insights with us as we honor World Press Freedom Day. We greatly appreciate it.
You bet. I really enjoyed being here, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about our work.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.